Today on The Grave Talks, animal spirits and astral projection.
It's hard to know, and all these things just come and go. I've been close, and here I stand, nothing to show. I get lost looking for who I am. I miss signs you've been trying to send.
From a very young age, Kacey Colburn knew she had special abilities. Abilities that the other children around her didn't know or understand. From communicating with wild animals, astral projecting around the house, to having conversations with a grandfather she had never met, Kacey was very much in touch with the spirit world. Today on The Grave Talks, we hear about what life is like when you're that close to the other side.
My first gift that I recognized and that my family actually recognized was my gift to communicate with animals. And I remember sitting in the middle of the kitchen, and I had a little brown bird visitor. I believe it was a wren. And I didn't catch the bird. I just asked it to come in, and it did, and it sat with me for quite some time. My mom, feeling the cold air from the door being open, she came into the kitchen to see what was going on. And I remember turning, you know, over my shoulder and asking her to be quiet. You know, I said, shh. And so that's, for me, when I really connected to that this wasn't a normal thing, you know, because she explained to me, like, how did you talk to the bird? And I told her, you know, and with it, it's much more of like a telepathic or heart connection. It's not really like a how me and you are talking right now.
Yeah, it's not a vocal, it's not, you said come here in a certain way or a certain accent or tone. It's almost how animals seem to communicate when we watch them. They're not necessarily saying anything out loud, but they seem to be able to communicate what their intents are. When you did this and you had this experience as a child, I guess, how did you feel about it? I mean, when you realized that this was not necessarily something that everyone has the ability to do?
Honestly, I didn't really think too much about it. You know, it wasn't, I didn't like feel like a superhero or anything like that. Like, I've heard a couple of people describe, you know, when they, you know, first recognize that it's something that's different. But I just felt really calm, at peace, I guess it kind of made my soul happy to recognize that was something I could do.
Can you describe for us what exactly it is like to have an experience like that? Like, what is going through your mind? How is the communication happening in the best way you can verbally explain such a thing?
It, for me, is I guess it's kind of like an intense focus. And I, even through like with my dog training and stuff in recent years, I kind of shut down emotion. I shut down all of that. And I become very, very calm. And the reason I just do it naturally, but the reason behind doing that is because if there's a lot of chaos and stuff going on, you know, it's stress and tension's going to build and then nothing's going to happen. What I want to accomplish isn't going to happen. And by staying calm and getting into that, like, super focus, it's really helped me connect to a lot of animals. I've worked with birds. I've had a visit with a couple of hawks when I was little, and the one had a like Polly Pocket dress thing on its talons, and I actually had to take it off from them. It was a wild bird, but I do have pictures of it and everything on, I honestly, probably MySpace. Because it was so long ago. But yes, I've had all these really cool experiences with bears, raccoons, you name it. I've probably had experiences with it, and not just in a domestic setting.
Sure. When you're having this experience and you're, it's a level of communication that's going on there. They're sensing you as being calm and safe and being open enough to to approach you. Are you feeling anything back from them? Are you feeling any sort of communications back from them?
I guess it's kind of like a mutual, like calmness. I've gotten really good at reading body language and stuff too. So I can kind of see if things are going to be a little bit different, because sometimes animals will get really stiff and really calm, in a negative way, you know, because they're kind of not so sure about what you're doing.
Sure.
And you know, you'll see that in like dog behavior and, cats too, you know, where they kind of freeze. So I still take caution, you know. I'm not saying, you know, you should just give it a try, because it can be very dangerous.
Yeah. Just be calm and walk into the bear cage and see what happens. Yeah. Not the advice. So you said that was the first of the gifts that you recognized and your family recognized. What else was recognized as time went on?
I have had a couple of them. I'm not sure which one came first, but I've been astral projecting ever since I was very little. My mom would kind of see us out of us, because my siblings and everybody can also do this, and we would spontaneously travel as a kid, and she would see us and, you know, yell at us to go back to bed, but we weren't actually out of bed. I'm not sure when that started, but that was probably one of the first ones too. And then the ability to communicate with spirit. And that happened, honestly, I didn't know that it was happening until my grandmother passed away. And then I knew that this was somebody that was once living that is no longer with us, that I'm still communicating with. And I was probably about 6 or 7 years old at that time. But I have met grandfathers before that I know that I've met and sat on their laps, and they've read things to me, but there would be no way that I could have even known about them. So that was before my realization of it.
Can you tell me about, in detail, what were some of those experiences like where you were communicating with spirits, grandparents, grandfathers that had passed on far before you were ever born? What happened there? What was the experience like? What was communicated?
I mean, it was just kind of like when you visit with your grandpa. I mean, I didn't notice anything different. They looked just like a living person.
What was the setting for this? What was the setting for this, though, exactly? Walk us through what was happening.
So apparently he had a favorite chair that he liked to sit in, and I used to crawl up into the chair, and that's all my parents saw. That's all my grandma saw when she was with us, and I would sit there and gab. They didn't really think too much of it until I started giving them details about grandpa, and because my mom had this Indian statue too that I used to sit on its lap and talk. So like me gabbing to imaginary things just wasn't like an unheard of thing. But I knew that I was talking to him. I didn't understand why they thought that I was like fibbing. It didn't bother me either, because, you know, I was little and I had other things to worry about. But it wasn't until I like started growing up and my mom was showing me photos and stuff, and I'm like, oh, I've met him. And she's like, no, you've never met him. And I'm like, yeah, I have very vivid memories of me sitting on his lap and him just talking to me.
Was that when you had that moment when you sat there and you were going through these photos and identifying this as just part of life? This was someone you talked to. Was that a real realization moment for you? Did that strike you as, oh my God, he was dead?
It was, you know, honestly, I don't really remember thinking too much, because at that time I knew that I had these abilities. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely very confusing, because it was like I was remembering a part of my life that like nobody else like knew about. Mm-hmm. And it was like it was very confusing and strange. But understanding what my abilities were and growing with them, I kind of just left it alone, you know. I still get guidance from all of my grandfathers too, so which I guess is kind of different. I guess usually women have their grandmothers with them, or at least within the Native culture, it's very common for the grandmothers to be spirit guides, but I have a whole team of my grandpas, and they talk to me all the time about things.
You said that is strange or not common for that being the grandfathers that are following you. Have you ever communicated or asked the question as to why? Why is it that it is the grandfathers and not the grandmothers that are with you?
I haven't. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, I with everything that I do, I'm very, I guess I work more with the masculine energy. So it's not saying that I'm not, you know, I don't have the feminine energies, obviously, because I'm a girl, I do, but I work more with that type of energy. I work closely with, like, I work with dragon energy, and that's very, that can be very masculine. And so a lot of things like that. I haven't really questioned it too much. Mm-hmm. But they have, like, given me a lot of really good guidance on things like silly things, too. Like, my Jeep was acting up, and my grandfather, who was a mechanic, was like, you know, it's this thing. And I can't tell you anything about cars. And sure enough, that's what it was. And so that was kind of interesting. That helped prove some of the stuff to my husband, too, because he is kind of a healthy skeptic, becoming more of a believer each experience that I have, and he can't, you know, disprove. But that was definitely kind of a turning point for him.
Let's talk about that for a moment. Let's talk about how your family was handling the realizations that you had these abilities when you were growing up. And then we can talk more about your husband as well. But how was it as a child when you were recognizing these things? Was your family open to these concepts?
They acknowledged them, and, you know, they were supportive about it. When I started getting more and more into it, my mom, she's my mother, she's very protective. So she started to tell me, you know, I needed to kind of back off it a little bit because I was, moving really fast, really, for my age. And, you know, she didn't want me to be communicating with things that could possibly be dangerous, you know, or attracting the wrong things. So she did kind of help me to realize that there is a time and a place for the certain thing. And everybody's been pretty supportive, though.
When you realized that you could do this, that you had this ability, and you were, in fact, communicating with deceased loved ones, and that there was a way to communicate with the dead, how did you dig deeper into that? What were some of your essentially initial paths or quests to try and prove this to yourself, or to just dig into it and see what you would find?
Well, my sister, she actually had a deck of tarot cards, and so I used that for a little bit as like some validation for some of the things that I was getting. That was probably one of the first ways that I really kind of dove further into everything. But I also, just connecting more and more with nature and going back to that first gift with working with animals and stuff, I really dove head first growing up into that's what my life was going to be about, was working with animals. And it felt right. It still kind of does feel right. But spirits kind of had a different plan for me, which is I'm well okay with.
Okay. And you said your husband, trying to prove this to him a little bit. It's quite a thing. It's obviously a big part of your life and who you are. How exactly did that conversation go when you first brought up, hey, by the way, I have these abilities, pass the Rice-a-Roni, or how did that go?
So, honestly, the first couple of years that I was dating him, I did try to kind of hide it, you know, kind of really, really suppress it. And we ended up in down in Roanoke. And that's a very, very active location. And it was a little bit overwhelming. And so I couldn't hide it, really, because I'm like, there's so much going on. I'm, you know, very clearly not acting like myself because I'm trying to avoid all of it. And so I had to kind of tell him then, but I started becoming a little bit more open about it too, like little by little, after my car accident in 2010, just because I was like, well, I need to use these right now. I needed it. And so I had to be open about it. And it was just kind of like a, here it is, deal with the information. If you don't want to stick around, I understand, but this is how it is.
This is you. Yeah, this is me. Yeah. Deal with it. Yeah, I understand. Let's talk about as you got older and you've had, obviously you knew your abilities, you recognized your abilities. That was no secret to you. And then obviously we have the world of ghost hunting that is starting or was starting to take shape in the early parts of the 2000s and then just kind of continued to grow and spread and have this variant and that variant. How did you find yourself in that world with an interest to investigate the paranormal and what drew you into it? What was your goal when diving into it?
So as I started to really kind of embrace it after like really, I guess, coming out to everybody about it, I was out of the broom closet. And I mean, cause I also like, I practice witchcraft and things like that. I'm a Wiccan. And so I had to kind of come out with that too. But I honestly, I went to the Hinsdale house and it was just kind of like a Halloween type thing. I had done a couple of other investigations at like friends' houses. I got permission to go to the cemetery here in Jamestown. And, you know, I started off doing that, but I was like, you know, I really want to see what some of these other locations are like. So I actually went right to the Hinsdale house. Mm-hmm. And I 100% believe that that house is what kind of set me on the path that I'm going now. It has kind of a way of doing that for certain people.
Before we talk about your experience there, what did you know about the Hinsdale house? Can you tell me what history and also educate our audience who may not know about the Hinsdale house and its past?
So the Hinsdale house has had quite a lot of history and tragedy, really, but it's mostly, I think, attracts people by the fact that there was a couple of broken exorcisms that took place, I believe, in the 70s with the Dandy family. And so it's also called the Dandy House. But there were a couple of exorcisms that took place on the property that didn't work. And with any kind of ceremony, you know, that can leave a big scar if it's not performed correctly, or if, you know, I believe the one guy just kind of in the middle of the exorcism just left. And so that kind of can create some issues there too. But there's been a lot of interesting things that have happened on that property from way, way, way back. I mean, they found Native American artifacts there. And I mean, I believe that it's very possible that there were natives there. There's been belief of a Pukwudgie that's there, which is a elemental that protects Native American burials. They've had a couple of interesting photos. And you'll hear me say that interesting because none of it's been, none of that side of things have been actually proven just yet, but we're getting closer to that answer. I'm very, very certain of it.
Mm-hmm. And we did an episode on the Hinsdale House quite a ways back, and the link is up on our website at The Grave Talks if anyone wants to listen to that and really learn the deep history of the Hinsdale House. But now, from what I understand, it is open for investigations, and individuals can set times to go in and do their own investigations there, correct?
Yes. Yep. And I've been there many, many times. The house does have a way of calling you back. It is... like probably, I know that this is going to be kind of a little hypocritical, but it's probably not the place that I would recommend to investigate, you know, if it's your first time going.
Okay.
Just because you know, especially if you are a little bit more sensitive, just because there is a little bit more of a energy change that's there. So it's, if you're looking for something that's going to really kind of give you what you're looking for, then definitely go there. But be ready.
It's not, and not to say don't go there, but it's more so saying if it's your exactly, it's not for the first round. It's not the amateur hour place to go and do ghost hunting. It's a place with quite a storied history, quite a past, and a lot of energy there. And you need to have some bearing on what you're doing before you jump in and investigate a location like that. And once you're there, once you have some experience, by all means, if that's an interest, then jump in. But don't make it your first stop, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, because it never will disappoint. I've been there many times, and it's been different each time. Sometimes we get a ton of activity outside. Sometimes we get a ton of activity inside. I've noticed that it seems to want to keep you walking around the property. I always come prepared with, metaphysical protection. So it's like your sage, sweetgrass, Palo Santo, crystals, that type of thing, because, you're working with spiritual stuff. So that's what you're going to use. So and I always offer things too, to the native spirits that I believe are there on the, towards the hill that's behind the house. I always do an offering for them before the investigation and after the investigation, which I help. I think really helps keep me kind of safe and protected while I'm there.
So what was the experience that you had there that you said really kind of set you on the path here?
So it's kind of interesting. So I had the one investigation there, and, I went back to my day job, which was at the time I was dog training and then transitioning into just doing grooming at a local grooming salon. And she knew an investigator, and they wanted to do an investigation at the shop because it was an old funeral home. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm interested. I'll do that. And she knew about, my abilities and stuff, because I was open about it. And so I ended up talking with him, and he knew the owner of the Hinsdale house, Daniel Class. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of reconnected me to the house. And it was not even a full year since the last time I had been there. And I was there again. And then I got to talking with Dan over Facebook, actually, about Creole food. And it turned into like a paranormal picnic and then into a paranormal event, which we had our first one last May at the Crystal Ballroom. And so it kind of like really connected me to Dan. And then now I'm doing all sorts of stuff, and I've been there hundreds of times. So that was really not that scary story that you're really looking for, but it really connected me to it. Because, while I'm connected to Dan, I'm also connected to the house. And I believe that the house brings people together like that, that it wants to be kind of a part of its history. For what reason, I still don't know. But so far, everything's been beneficial for me, as long as I show the house respect and I give it that honor. Like I said, I've been doing offerings for it, but I've for personal experiences there, I don't even really know where to start. My favorite one is about a spirit cat. I could go into that one if you'd like.
Let's hear your story.
Okay, so I was upstairs in the main room, and we were doing an investigation, and I was sitting by the windows facing towards the two bedrooms and the stairs. And it was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I saw what looked like a cat go up and go into Laura's room, which is right off the stairs. And I, because I love animals, I got very excited, and I was like, I very certain I just saw a cat. And everybody denied that there was a cat there. To me, it made perfect sense that there could be a cat there, because it's an old farmhouse. A cat could have come in, or, maybe somebody has a cat there, you know, because of mice and all that. And cats can hide very well. So it made sense that there could be, you know, a living cat there. And so I got up, went into Laura's room, checked everywhere, couldn't find a cat. So I was like, well, all right, it's late. My eyes are just seeing things. They, you know, I didn't jump on, you know, thinking it was a spirit cat. And everybody even mentioned, like, there's no spirit cats, there's no living cats, like, they just, there's no cat. So I was like, okay. So I sat back down, we went back to doing what we were doing. And, you know, probably about an hour or so went by, and we decided to go back downstairs. So we turned on our flashlights and everything, and right in the middle of the doorway where we came in and would have stepped on it was a little cat toy.
An interesting point, an interesting added piece to the story, because if there's no cat, why would there be a cat toy?
Yeah, I was so, like, happy, really. I was like, wow, that's really awesome validation. Mm-hmm. He, to me, it was the spirit of the cat that was saying, hey, you know, I'm acknowledging you for acknowledging me. Mm-hmm. Here's this toy right here in the middle of the door. And I mean, we would have kicked it with our feet coming into the room. And so it was kind of a very cool, like, aha moment. Like, I don't know that I caught it on camera or anything like that, but it was sometimes, you know, for experiences like that, it's not meant for the camera. It's not meant for your recorder. It's meant for you. And go ahead.
When you asked around about that, if there's no cat here, why is there a cat toy? You know, that's the thing. Unless there was a cat at one time and it had been kind of buried away somewhere, was there any explanation that you got as to where on earth this thing could have even come from?
It was after, really, because we kind of like, wow, that's really, really cool. I stuck it to the side so that it was still there for the cat. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just went on our way. But afterwards, I, you know, I was talking to a couple of people, and they've said, we've seen cat spirits there. Mm-hmm. And actually, the story of the house is that there were a couple of cats there that were being, I guess, kind of picked on, if you will, by spirit during the time of the Dandy family. And I mean, they would go up underneath the inside the mattresses of the girl's bedroom and, you know, try to hide. And so, I mean, it's kind of interesting that there is a connection to cats to the house. I just happened to have been able to see it at that time.
Sure. When it comes to the spirits of pets, of animals, I mean, many animals were never anyone's pet. They were just kind of wandering around, especially cats, just out in the open. Are they on the same trajectory? And this is an opinion-based question, but from your experiences and what you can sense, is it much like people where sometimes it makes sense why they're there because they lived in that house? Sometimes they're just kind of passing through, just as human spirits would. Is there a purpose when it comes to animal spirits as to why they are where they're at?
I mean, I think it's going to be with every situation, because you're going to have some that are spirit guides. You're going to have some that are, you know, they were part of the house. Now, whether it's a residual haunting where you're just kind of maybe seeing glimpses of what happened there, or an actual haunting where the animal spirit is still actually there. It's going to depend on certain things. So, like, there's a prime example for this would actually be at the Crystal Ballroom. We in Hotel Jamestown, we did a investigation there, and we were down, like, way down into the I call it the hells of the ballroom. And it's really deep. Like, it's the basement of the basement. And I kept seeing a German Shepherd, and I was like, I don't know why I see this, but he was kind of didn't want me to be in the space. So he was, you know, kind of doing the snarly type of thing. And his features almost look like maybe I was dealing with a wolf. So I'm like, maybe this is a spirit guide, mm-hmm. you know, because that's a typical thing. And so I got talking, you know, with it and with the people that have the ballroom. And they said, no, the maintenance man that had actually just recently passed away, he had his German shepherds and he would bring them down there while he worked. And they would kind of, you know, alert him to know if somebody was coming in, you know, like, you know, anybody that would need to talk to him. But that way, you know, he could keep his area free of things like that. And he doesn't really care for people being in his workspace. And I'm sure his dogs knew that. And that's why, you know, they were saying, hey, stay out of this area. But it was a very interesting thing. So those dogs were there because he was still kind of there, you know, because it was a recent thing. So he was still kind of going through the motions of how things were. And his animals were right there with him.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Casey Colburn about animal spirits and astral projection. In part two, we're going to ask, when a person dies, is our spirit reconnected with our pets? Plus, we'll jump more into astral projection and what was the reaction of Kay's mother when Kay astral projected herself out of bed as a child. What's it like to astral project oneself into another physical area? When someone astral projects to an area where other people are located, are the people able to notice the person or sense them in any way, shape, or form? And what dark path was Kay taken down when she astral projected into her mother's house as an adult? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.
We're tongue-tied with eyes closed. 3 more days until I'm on my own. You'll be on your way home and won't come back until the cold wind blows. It's hard to say, but always seem to find a way. Complicate memories I just can't change.